south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, first, let's dive into this stack of emails. This one's from Herbie. He says, Johnny, I live in Argentina, and here, the laws are written so that if you're married, there are automatic prenups. That means all the individual assets prior to the marriage are excluded from any divorce proceedings. He says the net effect is that men initiate divorce 70% of the time for personal reasons. Normally, to get with younger women, of course. Even so, there's much, much less divorce here in Argentina than up in the States. Married guys will just cheat and sneak around. And divorces only arrive when it gets too excessive. It's simple. Every guy knows if he gets a divorce, he gets to keep everything he had up to the moment of marriage and half thereafter. The ladies get treated the same, but they also know that the men generally bring a lot more into the marriage from day one, like a house, car, or property. And the ladies here will get none of that if there's a divorce. Only from day one in the marriage will they divide the property in half. Those statistics are just the opposite compared to the West, where women instigate divorce 70% of the time. Often, the women get a much better deal than the men because he's stuck paying alimony or child support. On top of that, she gets half of everything, too, from before and after the marriage. So, in my mind, he says, if you take that off the table, in other words, you make prenups automatic, like in Argentina, it means people will stay married longer and for the right reasons. It won't be all about the finances, because no one really gains a financial advantage. So I think there should be automatic paternity testing, too. However, I know up in the States, women are hypocrites because they want equality, but they would never go for automatic prenups. Some years ago, when I was living back in the States, I mentioned that to a couple of girlfriends and ladies in my family, and they were appalled by the notion of an automatic prenup. In the U.S. and Canada and Europe, the divorce industrial complex would never allow that, he says. So, Johnny, whenever I'm having a down day or feel depressed, which isn't often, I think to myself, boy, am I glad I'm living in Argentina. Signed, Herbie, living the vida loca. P.S., he says, anyone here in Argentina with a half a brain and who isn't a socialist loves Milei. However, the question persists, is the country so broken that no one can fix it? Time will tell, but so far he's really kicking ass. He's only been in office 2 months and he's already balanced the budget. That hasn't been done in 15 years. All right, me Johnny here. Thanks for that, Herbie. You know, what you're saying seems to be the case in most all Latin America. I'm talking about marriages and prenuptial agreements, the way most Latin countries handle that. I know for sure, at least in Central America, when you're going to get married, right when you're signing the marriage agreement, you're allowed to select if you want to go by the community property laws, which means 50-50 on everything if you get divorced, or option two, which is pretty much the default setting and most everyone selects it. That is, you'd split or share only the property you obtain since the date of the marriage. And you know, down here in Latin America, you don't run into divorced Latinos very often. And when you do, it's mostly in the upper classes. That's always kind of baffled me, since most everyone I know up in the States, anyone over 50 anyway, seems to be divorced. Often, more than once. Of my generation anyway, not my parents' generation, but my generation. Man, I'll tell you, the couples in my parents' generation stuck together through thick and thin, even if they hated each other. It's hard to believe, but back then, the stigma of divorce had some nasty consequences. Especially for the woman. It was like a scarlet letter. Hit them financially and socially. But that was then. Though here in Latin America, I repeat, I rarely meet Latin Americans who are divorced by law. And when I do, they're almost always of the upper classes. So why is that? Well, that's because the lower and middle classes most often don't actually tie the knot legally. Most will just skip that step altogether. And it's very strange, too, at least to us gringos and expats. You come down here, you meet a couple that's been together a couple years, maybe 10 or 20 years. They've got some kids, maybe adult kids. They're married. They say they're married. They call each other husband and wife, but they're not really married. Not legally anyway, though by common law, of course. You know, every country has laws stipulating what's a common law marriage, how many years you spend living with a person, is the basis for all that. You know, early on when people first started telling me that most people aren't actually married legally, I was a little shocked at first. But then I began to notice when I'd visit people's houses, there'd be no wedding photos in the living room or on the fireplace mantel. And in the U.S., that's par for the course, right? Now, the reason why I was so shocked is because I was brought up Catholic, went to Catholic schools and all that. I remember those cardinal rules that, if broken, would send you straight to hell. Like, for example, living in sin or having a kid out of wedlock. So then, why do so many Latinos break those cardinal rules in such a Christian Catholic culture? How can they be all right with it? Hell, you're reminded of it every time you walk into a Latino's house. They've got the Madonna and Jesus statues, the candles burning. Now, that's not to say there aren't weddings going on. Every weekend, you see ladies in their white wedding gowns having photo shoots in parks. The truth is, weddings are expensive, and the average Latin family making $300 to $500 a month, well, that's one big reason why so many couples never get around to it. Even just going down to the courthouse and having a civil wedding performed. That costs two, and yeah, I have to throw a party. Most people never get around to doing that either. Now, from what I've seen, and I've known lots of married couples down here, at least I thought they were married, but they're really not. I'd say, except when you're talking about the upper classes, only about 20% of couples you think are married actually have the paperwork. Again, you get fooled all the time because when you're introduced to people, they'll always say, this is my husband or this is my wife. In most cases, legally, they're not. Personally, I quit trying to figure it out. It's a real conundrum. So I think in the majority of cases, it's just about the money. If you get married and throw a big bash, you have to invite everybody, and the extended families down here are massive. And though Latino families don't spare the expense, when their daughters hit 15 years old, they have that big quinceañeros party, often going into debt for years on those things. That's a hardcore tradition, and if you don't do that for your 15-year-old girl, she'll carry that burden forever. In that case, it's all about putting on a show for your neighbors and relatives. The quinceañeros party competition is fierce. And you know, what people don't seem to appreciate is, since there are very few legit weddings down here, that also means there are way fewer divorces. When people split, they just walk away. Somehow I think one of the other reasons the marriage statistics are so low is that people know divorces are expensive and take forever. Sometimes with all the paperwork, the court dates and appearances, it could take years. Oh, and I'm talking about expensive, Latin American style. You know, I just looked it up. The average cost for a divorce in the United States is $8,000 to $12,000. That's about 2 years' salary for the average Latin American. Now, when I say it's expensive for a divorce here in Latin America, again, it's all relative. I'm talking about expensive Latin American style. I understand, talking to lawyers down here, that the average divorce costs around $1,200. That's for attorney's fees, court filings, and all that. Anyway, keep all of that in mind next time you're in Latin America and you're introduced to a couple as husband and wife. It's a good bet that legally, they're not. Oh, and the other telltale sign for the ladies is no wedding ring. So then, why the pretense? Why the act? Obviously, it's connected to the fact that in Latino culture, there's no shame at all to having a kid out of wedlock. Though it's getting that way up in the States, too. In fact, for me, I can hardly think of a Latino family who does not have a single daughter or two living in the house with a kid. Which brings up another conundrum for me and so many gringos. We're always hearing the same old rant from Latinas telling us that Latin men are no good. They're womanizers, they're irresponsible, they're macho, abusive, they lie, including their own brothers, uncles, fathers, cousins. Yet those same Latinas hook up with those guys as boyfriends, husbands, and have kids with them. It's hard for us gringos and expats to parse out that conundrum. I mean, look, the majority of Latin guys are accused by Latin ladies of being scumbags, yet they all end up having kids with them. Think about that for a minute. The only way that makes sense is to realize Latin men are the only option the ladies have in their available dating pool. That is, until just recently when internet dating sites came along. Of course, not all Latin men are shiftless, macho womanizers. There are Latino guys who aren't womanizers, who take care of themselves and live a decent life. Most of those guys are in that 20 or 25% who are married legally. Yep, it's not lower class guys who get married. There seems to be a strong correlation with Latino men who are healthy and successful, eventually getting married legally. But it's not the legal marriage by the books with the paperwork by itself that makes these guys more healthy and stable. Oh, and by the way, those marriageable types have way less bling and fewer tattoos. and more likely to have a job on the books. In fact, you could almost predict with certainty that a Latino guy who's married is working on the books and paying taxes. Meanwhile, speaking of bling and tattoos, here's something I never considered. Maybe you didn't either. This from an article that just came out. I'll translate. Title of the article? Tattoo studios experience big surge in requests for cover-ups of gang-associated tattoos. Man, we should have seen that one coming, huh? Very interesting. I'll paraphrase this. It says, in the wake of state crackdowns on gangs and mass incarcerations, there has been a change of heart with many tattooed gang members who are still on the loose. Tattoo artists throughout Latin America, especially in El Salvador and Ecuador, are witnessing a massive surge in clients seeking to recycle or cover up tattoos associated with criminal gangs. As those gang symbols and tokens once chosen with pride and personal significance have recently been transformed into stigmatizing billboards. These days, the ink they were once so proud of is putting them in the spotlight of authorities and police. It says, for example, Andres, name withheld, a 26-year-old resident of Ecuador, recently decided to modify a tattoo he'd got 40 years ago, a 15-centimeter tiger head pierced by a dagger associated with the criminal gang Los Tigarones. This tattoo declared and shouted out he was a member in good standing of one of the 22 drug gangs in Ecuador. Those 22 gangs are now classified as terrorist organizations. Anyone with said tattoos is immediately jailed. It says the police specifically focus on identifying criminals through their tattoos, particularly those featuring wild animals like tigers, wolves, eagles, or lizards. Oh, by the way, it says this interview was taking place in a South Guayaquil, Ecuador tattoo studio, whilst Andres was getting his gangland tiger tattoo modified. Then it says, according to the owner of the tattoo parlor, cover-up tattoo trends have gained huge momentum over the past year, while at the same time, he noted a huge decline in people's interest in having new tattoos. Instead, he said a high number of clients are now seeking to erase or remodel their existing tattoos, especially those tied to gangs and organized crime. Then it says tattoo studios in Ecuador are now handling hundreds more clients as they now grapple with the fallout from the country's war on gangs and crime. So then what about laser tattoo removal? Well, as it turns out, the process of covering up a tattoo with more ink is much more economical and less painful than the alternative, laser removal. Modifying an existing tattoo can cost as little as $30, while laser removal can cost between $70 and $150 per session, requiring 8 to 10 sessions, which is why very few clients opt for laser treatment. So then how do the police and the local authorities feel about this? Well, tattoo cover-ups are a quick fix from a distance, but they don't fool cops on close inspection. Observe for yourself, the owner of the tattoo parlor says. A fresh tattoo, blending, or covering an old tattoo can be easily sussed out under certain angles of lighting. And laser tattoo removal is a giveaway too, leaving pink, fresh, tender skin, also with a faint outline of the original tattoo. All right, good to know, especially if you're a cop. On a somewhat similar note, it's been said that 70 to 80% of all the dating that goes on in the first world anyway, the connections are initiated through those dating apps, Tinder, Cupid, whatever. And you know, when you get on those things, you have to set up a profile of yourself, right? People put those filtered pictures and lie about their age and their height, the whole works. I'm thinking, why don't they have one of those dating sites where there's a section in your profile of the things you won't tolerate in a mate that should cut through the bullshit immediately? Like, for example, don't bother to swipe if you're a smoker, you don't floss, and you have some glaringly obvious tattoos, or think Fauci's an American hero, things like that. I'm mentioning this mating and dating stuff here now because I got this email from Thomas. Listen to this. He says, Johnny, I'm not ugly. At least I never thought I was. But when I went on Match.com, no one would talk to me. The ladies just would not swipe on my photo. So I thought and I thought. Then I put up an obvious fake photo of a male model instead and got more compliments than I could possibly handle. Now, I'm not talking about Latin American Cupid dating sites. I'm talking about ones in the good old USA, Match.com. So naturally, with my ego well-stroked, I started communicating with the ladies. But soon realized after about a day or two of that, this was the land of make-believe. I just felt kind of stupid going on with the fraud. It was fraud. And everyone else is lying and bullshitting too. My backstory, Johnny, is this. I'm 48, newly divorced, and recently new to online dating. So in the first week or so, when I got no swipes, I realized I hadn't cracked the code yet. The code being posting fake photos of people hotter than you are and stretching the truth wherever you can. Thing is, Johnny, I'm not real good at lying and faking it. I thought if I ever did actually hook up with one of the girls I was talking to, I'd more than likely get cold feet and not show up. First off, she might not recognize me. But then again, I might not recognize her. Who knows how much she's been bullshitting me. By the way, Johnny, just as a test, a couple of days later, I put a more reasonable photo of myself back on my posted dating site. Admittedly, I cheated a bit. It was a photo of me 10 years earlier, when I had a lot more and thicker hair. I figured I was at least pushing a 6.5 or 7. Guess what? Most of the hits I started getting were from women I have zero interest in dating. All of them appeared older than me and not that attractive. Johnny, I learned a lot in those 3 weeks I was on those dating sites. Rule number one, 95% of women are only interested in 5% of men. So don't think if you rate yourself above average, a 6, a 7, or even an 8, the hot girls or desirable girls are going to connect with you. I think that is basically why women love being on dating apps. They want to see how many desperate men will swipe right on them, knowing they'll have no intention of swiping back or having an actual date with them. They get addicted to the attention and the dopamine spike. What I mean to say is they get constant attention and validation, which inflates their egos. Normal women new to the apps get contaminated once they realize they can become mini celebrities, as guys continuously inflate their egos. That's also why unattractive women, who modify their photos and such, think they're 9s and 10s. This is truly a messed up world we live in, Johnny. Then he says, so guys, a word of advice if you're going to play the online dating game. If you use a real photo of yourself, keep your mouth closed if you've got gnarly yellow teeth and ditch the baseball cap and the plaid Duck Hunters shirt. Or just post a picture of your better-looking brother. In other words, you don't want to come off as an oil patch worker with 22 chromosomes. All right, that was from Tom. Obviously, Tom has not yet attempted to use those Latina Cupid dating sites. Believe me, if you do, you'll never be lonely. You'll get swiped on constantly. But please, be very careful, since the vast majority of ladies you'll find on those sites might not be ladies at all, but bots or Russian dating mill call centers specifically designed to suck in lovelorn gringos. Like, for example, my brother. In fact, there was a time he was spending $400 or $500 a month sending money by Western Union to different Latinas all over the place. He'd text with them every day, and they all had hard luck stories. Rent to pay, kids to feed, grandma in the hospital. There are thousands, if not millions, of lovelorn gringos doing exactly the same thing, sending money monthly to various extremely hot Latinas who've given them hard luck stories. And in many, if not most cases, it's been proven, those ladies are not ladies at all. But you know that gringo savior complex runs wide and deep. We spoke about that very thing in a show a couple of weeks ago. That lovelorn gringo sickness, otherwise known as gringo savior complex. All right, moving on. Speaking of conundrums, did you ever hear of the Hispanic paradox? It's a real thing. It's been researched for dozens of years now. Well, let's get into it, starting with a brand new article that just came out explaining the whole thing and what the hell's going on. Here's the title. It says, The Hispanic Paradox. There's a new generation of researchers determined to unravel it. And once again, I'll paraphrase this, cut out the boring parts. It says, for 40 years, researchers have unsuccessfully tried to explain or debunk the Hispanic paradox. So then what's this paradox all about? Well, they're finding that Hispanic Americans live several years longer than white Americans on average, despite arriving broken, poor, and even once they get to the States, having far less income and health care, and higher rates of diabetes and obesity. Yet they still live on average several years longer than white Americans who've been there for generations. Then it says, now armed with more comprehensive data, powerful genomic tools, and rich cultural awareness of the communities they are studying, a new generation of scientists are finally making headway into the Hispanic paradox. By the way, it was first noticed or mentioned in a University of Texas Healthcare Science Center study back in 1986. Showing that in almost all cases, immigrant Hispanics in the American Southwest lived as long or longer than white people in the same area, even though white Americans had much better health care. By the way, in 1986, when that study first came out, it might have been the very first instance that I heard of someone being canceled for his research because it seems the author of this study, Karakos Markides, a faculty member at the University of Texas Healthcare Science Center in San Antonio, said at the time his colleagues warned him against publishing the findings because they thought they were so obviously wrong. He must have made an error. They told him he must have had bad data. But he said he stuck his neck out with his colleagues and published. And over time, as more and more Hispanic people were included in more and more studies, the new data confirmed his findings completely. But other researchers kept thinking there were flaws, looking for reasons to overturn the paradox. The first group of debunkers said his data was wrong because there was a so-called salmon bias, S-A-L-M-O-N, like the fish, which goes as follows. They said many Hispanic immigrants would never end up in the U.S. mortality number data because once they made some money in the U.S., got a little bit older, they'd return to their native countries to live and die. That way, they'd never end up in the U.S. mortality stats and skew the numbers. That hypothesis turned out to be wrong. After a large analysis of Social Security data showed the salmon bias was way too small to explain the paradox. In fact, it was insignificant. Then there was a group of scientists that tried to debunk the data by saying only certain kinds of Latinos migrated to the United States, the unusually fit and strong, thinking they would have to be to make the journey. Not to mention the old and unfit would die along the way, so they'd never even make it to the States to be counted in the data. They also debunked the idea that Hispanic deaths are fewer in the States because the population that arrives is younger. Well, as it turns out, with 40 years to study the data, it's been analyzed extensively, and even when adjusting for age, the paradox still holds. Now, the more rational explanation is the role of diet in these newly arrived immigrants. Culturally accustomed to eating a legume diet, rice, beans, fruits, and vegetables, and unprocessed meals. There's been lots of evidence, though not completely conclusive, that food explains the longevity. Though it is true that the diets of immigrants worsens as time goes on, after they reach the U.S., that is. Which seems to explain the reason why the second generation of Latinos in the United States do not exhibit the Hispanic paradox, since second-generation Latinos are on an all-American diet. So then how strong an effect is this Hispanic paradox? Well, a meta-analysis of 58 studies by the University of North Texas confirmed the paradox does truly exist and shows that the U.S. Hispanic population has a 17.5% lower risk of mortality from any cause compared to other racial and ethnic groups. By the way, there's been other research on what's been termed the Barrio effect, showing that people in high-density Hispanic neighborhoods in the U.S. also have much better health outcomes, despite higher levels of crime and poverty. Researchers are calling that the Barrio effect. By the way, as far as COVID, data in 2022 show Hispanics were still outliving white people by more than a year, even though the COVIDiot lockdowns killed Hispanics at a higher rate than whites. So then what's happening here? What's the key? Well, a recent metadata study from 2022 worldwide noted that the Hispanic paradox was global, not tied solely to immigration in the U.S. In addition to Hispanics living in the U.S., though, people living in countries such as Nicaragua, Colombia, Cuba, and Peru lived longer than whites in the USA, even though they had far less frequent doctor and hospital visits. Simply because they just can't afford to go regularly. Could that be the key? They don't go to the doctor or to a hospital unless they really are sick. So then maybe that's the key. When you go to a doctor or a hospital up in the States, you always walk out with a dose of pills or some kind of prescription. Latinos are on far, far less prescription medicine than Americans. Just check out their medicine cabinets. I always do. Besides that, they have much more cohesive social and family networks. That means with big families living in households. If someone falls down the stairs and breaks a leg or someone just gets sick, they've always got family members around for instant help and assistance. However, recent studies have delivered a different and more important message that Hispanics, being that they have higher rates of diabetes and obesity, tend to live longer, but they tend to live sicker too. And that doesn't matter if they're living in the States, Nicaragua, Mexico, anywhere they move to. Then it says, in investigating all this data, they've also found some different conundrums. Like, for example, Latinos are known to have some of the lowest rates of asthma in the world. All right, me, Johnny, here. You know, until I read this article, I never realized it. But in all the years I've been down here in Latin America, a couple of decades now, I never met a single Latino who used an inhaler. In fact, I've never seen a Latino use one out in public. Seen a few gringos do it, but never a Latino. By the way, another thing that complicates this asthma thing is that it turns out up in the United States, in New York, there are lots of Latinos of African ancestry. There are very dark-skinned Latinos from places like Puerto Rico and the DR, Brazil, etc. Turns out they have higher rates of asthma, but not the white, light-skinned, or tanned Latinos. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now. One last bit of news. I don't know if you're going to laugh or cry about this one. It goes both ways. The title of the article is Peruvian Leaders Push for an End to Cat Barbecues. That's right, cat barbecues. They say it's a sad throwback to Spanish colonialism. This one comes from the Peruvian Wire Service. It says a Peruvian congressman has joined animal rights activists in their efforts to stop the consumption of barbecued cats at their annual religious festivals. Goes on to say, at least 100 cats will be barbecued and eaten this weekend at the festival of Santa Efigenia in just one town, La Quebrada, a town just south of Lima, Peru. And that's just in one particular town. The festival, which occurs one day a year, has, in addition to the barbecues, a variety of activities, including cat races and live cat roasting contests, all of which activists say constitute animal cruelty. Meanwhile, Health Minister Midori Dahabich says the practice should be halted, but she's taken no action since it's been a tradition for hundreds of years. Meanwhile, residents defend their tradition and say the cats sacrificed are specially bred for the event, claiming that cat festivals are a throwback to the 16th and 17th century European tradition of torturing and eating cats. It goes on to say cat roastings were first started in Cuenca, Ecuador in the 1700s, and the Spanish governor, José Antonio Viajero, took part in it. He encouraged families to come to the Central Plaza, now Parque Calderon, on Sunday nights to watch cats in wire meshes being lowered into the fire. According to González Suárez, a knowledgeable Spanish historian, he says, quote, "The caterwauling and writhing of the burning felines always delighted and amused the spectators. And once the cats were roasted to death, they were given to spectators to eat. And 3 centuries later, once a year, they still carry on that spectacle." So that's where they get that word from, caterwauling. Hey, I'm no big cat lover myself, but that is pretty gruesome.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.